Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
A bill to allow automatic voter registration in New York failed in the final days of the legislative session after a mistake in the language would have allowed undocumented immigrants to vote. Sponsors say it was an honest mistake, but it caused concern among Republicans in the legislature and earned Democrats a chiding from Governor Andrew Cuomo. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The measure would make registering to vote an opt-out rather than an opt-in process. So when New Yorkers go to the Department of Motor Vehicles or other state agencies, their names would automatically be sent to their local boards of election to be verified for whether they are eligible to vote in the next election. It's estimated that the change could register 1.5 million new voters in the state, and supporters believe it could improve accuracy in the voter rolls. The bill passed the Democratic-led state Senate last month. But when it got to the Assembly, where Democrats are also in control, minority party Republicans discovered a mistake. The bill would inadvertently register undocumented immigrants to vote. Susan Lerner with the government reform group Common Cause says it was pure human error.
There was a typo. The word "not" was in there when it shouldn't have been. Very simple.
She says it was in a section hastily added during the end of the session crunch to ensure that undocumented immigrants' names did not get sent to the Board of Elections by mistake.
So it was exactly the opposite. It was an attempt to ensure that people who were not eligible, doubly ensure that they wouldn't be mistakenly picked up by the system.
The Republican Assemblywoman who discovered the error, Nicole Malliotakis, spoke at a recent meeting of the Republican Party, where immigration policy was a hot-button issue. Many Republicans have accused Democrats of wanting to get undocumented immigrants on the voter rolls, something Democrats say is not true. Malliotakis says she believes the language in the bill was deliberate, saying that was no error.
And this is the way that they ensure that they continue to win these elections, not the honest way. That's what's going on here.
Democrats say it would not make any sense politically to deliberately try to pass a bill to allow undocumented people to vote when they know the issue of immigration is so controversial. Lerner with Common Cause says when other bills have had mistakes, lawmakers approve what's called a chapter amendment to clean up the language and move on. But she says because this bill involved immigration, it was ultimately pulled.
In another bill, it would have passed and been fixed.
She says there's time in the next legislative session for a corrected automatic voter registration bill to be drafted and approved by the state Senate and Assembly in time for the planned 2021 implementation date. Governor Cuomo, who has at times had a poor relationship with Democrats in the legislature, lectured lawmakers for their carelessness.
We have had, I'm not going to make amateur mistakes, right? Automatic voter registration bill. Yeah. I would have had to veto it if they pass it. The way it was written, it would have allowed undocumented people who got a driver's license the right to vote. You know, I get the political intent, but then there's the legal effect and the governmental effect and the policy.
The failure of the automatic voter registration measure comes in a session that saw voters' rights expanded. Beginning this fall, voters will have up to 10 days before Election Day to go to the polls for early voting. And lawmakers began the process of changing the state's constitution to allow mail-in balloting and same-day voter registration. Lerner says she's disappointed, though, that a measure to allow paroled felons to vote failed. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week you spoke with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Whoa, what a conversation.
And he's
got a lot of fun.
He's been on this riff about what it means to be a progressive. You were questioning him about the Queens race, which is in a manual recount right now.
16 vote difference.
Yeah. And you said to him, has this put him in a bad spot? He backed establishment candidate Melinda Katz as opposed to Tiffany Caban, the progressive. And he ended that conversation with saying, I am the left.
Well, he did. Made the Daily News, that quote, and made the New York Post. A lot of people are talking because basically he is making the argument, look, I've done more than any governor has ever done before. I have a whole list of accomplishments. That makes me a progressive. And we go back to all those conversations we had with his father, in which Mario Cuomo would describe himself as a progressive pragmatist. And now we are seeing the same basic argument from his son, who's saying, look, I've done it, therefore I get the credit, and therefore I'm a progressive. Apparently the idea is you say it enough and people will say, well, yeah, he's right about that. There'll be some who say, okay, cut it out already, it's enough.
Is he a progressive, Alan?
Well, I think anybody who passes legislation, for example, about gay marriage and things of that kind, I don't know who signs it, they have the right to call themselves progressives. It is fairly well known that Andrew Cuomo came into the governorship as a moderate, but as the party moved left, so did he. And I think the whole name game here is a little ridiculous, but he obviously thinks it's important enough to reiterate this claim again and again.
Alan, this week our Karen DeWitt is reporting on the automatic voter registration legislation that failed to pass in the New York State Legislature this session. After, quote, a mistake in the language would have allowed undocumented immigrants to vote, sponsors say it was an honest mistake.
Well, look, first of all, a great kudos to Karen DeWitt for everything that she does for public radio. She's extraordinary. Secondly, yes, there is all kinds of mischief that is done in the closing hours of the legislature. We need to have same-day registration. We need to have fair voting laws. The problem is that the people who are in the legislature now, despite all of the rhetoric and moving left and everything else, they know full well how they got there. They got there under this system, and they are not about to change it. We're not about to have same-day registration. We're not about to have these things because they don't want it. They're afraid that, as I've often said, that Irving the bartender will run against them and might and win. So, and now with AOC's success and democratic socialism coming up, the last thing that the organized guys in the legislature want is to change the system to make it easier for people to vote, for people to. So they pass a bill, and then there's a sentence out of place or a period out of place, or there's a difference between one House bill and the other House. Who do they think they're fooling? We know what this is about.
Well, there was some joy in New York this week. The U.S. women's soccer team rode down the Avenue of Heroes for a ticker tape parade after winning the World Cup championship. The governor also made an appearance to sign a law guaranteeing equal pay for women in New York. I'm going to sign a law today that says it's not just the right thing to do, it's not just the moral thing to do, it's also the law in New York State, said the governor. He sort of upstaged the mayor, Bill de Blasio, as well, as the mayor said he would do the same if elected president for the country.
Well, first of all, he's not going to get elected president for the country. Secondly, you know, the state is always much more important than the city. In fact, one of the great laws of political science is the city is a creature of the state. If they want to change things, the state has all of the power. But in this case, how can anybody deny that women should be paid exactly what men are paid for the same jobs? In the universities, we've been facing this for a long time, and there has been a tremendous adjustment period that's been happening. But it's not enough. There are still women who are being paid less than men for the same job. And it's not right. And that's why this soccer team has been exemplary in making that an upfront pledge and making it something that they have been working hard to have happen. And you can only respect them for it because there is no rationale, none, especially for those of us with wives and sisters and mothers who have suffered under this for way too long.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. It's Invasive Species Awareness Week in New York, coordinated through Regional PRISMS, Partnership for Regional Invasive Species Management. This year's theme is Early Detection, Explore, Observe, Report. Recently, the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley sent a picture of an insect to the Adirondack Park Invasive Program Director Quentin Quirin, asking him if it was an invasive beetle. It wasn't. Quirin says a number of invasive species are near twins to native species, and that can make detection challenging.
It's fairly common. There are several plants and animals that have close lookalikes, but usually once you start looking closely at the identification characteristics, they're pretty easy to tell apart.
But for the average person, the lay person, what sorts of things are out there that they might encounter?
The white-spotted pine sawyer, which looks very similar to Asian longhorn beetle. The pine sawyer associates with pine trees, has, you know, a black body, white spots with these long antennae. The Asian longhorn beetle associates with hardwood trees, so things like maples, birches, cherry, etc. It's much larger. It has a black body with white spots as well, but also has tints of blue in it. And the main difference that we tell people to look for is the white-spotted pine sawyer. Its namesake is because it has a white spot in between its wing plates on its back, right up by the top of its head. If you see that on a beetle that looks like Asian longhorn beetle, it's a white-spotted pine sawyer. Asian longhorn beetle doesn't have that. There are also plants that have common lookalikes. So another one that we get a lot of calls about is central giant hogweed. So giant hogweed is this plant that grows, you know, 12 feet tall with this big white flower on the top, and it's very harmful to human health. It can burn your skin. And there's a native lookalike called cow parsnip that doesn't grow quite as tall, usually grows, you know, maybe 5-6 feet tall at most, but also has this big white flower, and people think it's giant hogweed all the time. We get calls about different patches of cow parsnip throughout the Adirondacks each year.
How difficult does this make it when you also have to deal with the lookalike situation?
We really encourage people to report things, whether they know for certain or not. It's much better to report something and have us verify that it's not invasive than to think it might not be invasive, not report it to us, and then have it cause harm. So we always encourage people to report what they see to us. What we also encourage is to come to one of our trainings. We offer invasive species identification trainings throughout the Adirondacks each summer, both for terrestrial species and aquatic species. And that's really where we get into the nitty-gritty on how to tell these species apart. There are certain characteristics that you can look for and easily tell one from the other.
Brendan Quirin, when I brought the question about the Asian longhorn beetle lookalike to you, the homeowners not only didn't have any familiarity with the Asian longhorn beetle, they didn't seem to have any familiarity with invasives in general. How big a challenge is that, and how common is that?
Yeah, unfortunately, invasive species or knowledge of invasive species lags behind other top environmental challenges like climate change. That's been demonstrated across the country, and it reinforces to us the need for more robust education outreach campaigns and awareness building campaigns focused on invasive species, because we have a lot of work to do still. There are a lot of people out here that don't know what invasive species are or haven't even heard that term before.
There are a number of training workshops across the state during Invasive Species Awareness Week. Links for more information are at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
New York passed what Governor Andrew Cuomo called the most comprehensive climate change law in the nation. It's called the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. To get a deeper look at this new law, we spoke with Paula DiPerna, a special advisor to CBP, formerly known as the Carbon Disclosure Project. Ms. DiPerna formerly served as president of CCX International, Chicago Climate Exchange, a private company that pioneered climate change emissions trading worldwide with special responsibilities for China and Asia. She's testified before the Committee on Natural Resources in the United States Congress about the impacts and need to act on climate change, and she's had an audience with the Pope, who invited her to attend a major environmental conference on climate change at the Vatican. In the first part of our three-part interview, I began by asking Paula about the new climate law with its lofty goals, whether it's nothing more than an unfunded mandate.
Well, to some extent, that's correct. I mean, it is an unfunded mandate on certain levels. But on the other hand, if you don't, you know, it's like you come home at night in the dark. If you don't put a light on, you trip. So, you know, this is a light. This is a guiding light. It's a beacon. It's a target. It's an aspirational statement. I don't think it should require 2 years to flesh out the details. I think the details are known. How we get to in New York State, we have, I think it's 60% of our energy already coming from renewable sources. So getting that other 40% without the concomitant investment in infrastructure is going to be hard. The bill is almost silent on to what extent, quote, offsets would be permissible to achieve the target. You know, where does the fund, you know, why don't we go to the capital markets and just get a bond issue? Whatever happened to bond issues? You know, this should be a bond issue. There should be, the capital markets would love, I'm sure, to invest in a coherent plan for New York State to meet these goals. And that's where I think the breakdown is, that you can't just dream about doing something about climate change. You can't dictate. It's just, again, going back to the diet. Yeah, you got to lose 20 pounds. Okay, how? I'm doing my best. I'm running. I cut back on saturated fats. I'm eating only two meals, and I'm still not losing weight. Oh, that's because my metabolism has changed because I'm now a certain age that I wasn't before. Why didn't you tell me that when I went on the diet? I would have made a different choice about the foods that I would be eating. So, you know, just the way when you're trying to lose weight, you got to align your metabolism with your intake, with your exercise for good health. The same is true with climate change. You have to align. It's a very fine machine. But on the other hand, it's a fascinating thing.
But isn't it an age-old problem, Paula, when it comes to state government and agencies? So many agencies are tasked with implementing rules. And you look at the DEC for years, which has complained, we don't have the enforcement personnel to make it happen. So how is this 22-member Climate Action Council that's supposed to come up with these, make these goals happen? How do they, as you say, how do they make it happen?
Well, I think they have to have a diversity of thought. I mean, as I said, 2 years is, if you put 2 years into planning, you're not really reaping the benefit of the 50 or 100 years of study that's already gone into this. So I would speed that up by at least a year. And I think, you know, you have to look at, I keep going back to investment, that, and also changes. It's not the public. I think what we're getting from the presidential race is that the public is tired of hearing that the structures cannot deliver. If indeed there's not funding for this plan, there has to be funding made available. We have to educate even the legislators and the taxpayers that this is a good investment of money, and we make the money come into the system. If we spend the money for 2 years on this commission, and in 2 years they come up with something they could have come up with tomorrow, that's not a good use of time. And I think we really do have to talk about, are our systems, our decision-making systems, fit for purpose when climate change is concerned? Because it is not one thing or another. It's really not an environmental problem, climate change. It's an industrial problem.
That's Paula DePerna, special advisor to CDP. And a global climate expert who's testified before Congress and in an audience with the Pope on the issue of climate change. We'll have part two of our three-part interview next week. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Last week, we spoke with Tim Creamer, executive director of the New York State School Boards Association, who's retiring in December after over two decades in the post. This week, we continue our discussion with Tim about some of the very important issues affecting education in New York.
You know, we make a lot of assumptions when it comes to law and what's in the law, and I assumed that we had mandatory kindergarten in New York. Not until now, huh? What's that about?
So did I.
It's very interesting.
Well, I did not know this, but apparently there are times when people arrive in a school district and their children have not gone to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Now, there can be exceptions made, and that's part of this law as well. But typically what we want to see is a pathway that takes a child through kindergarten before they get to first grade. And this would say if a child is going to turn five, they need to go to kindergarten. You can't just skip that and put them in because they've been in pre-K or something like that, and you decide they're ready for first grade or whatever those circumstances are. This is now going to give boards of education the option of making it their policy that every child who is 5 years old has to go through kindergarten. We'll make some exemptions, some exceptions if need be. And a board does not have to have that policy in place, but they have the option to do so.
Explain your position as it disagrees with at least the major NYSET union on the civil servant protections that didn't go through.
Yeah, I don't know where exactly NYSET was on that particular thing, but what we did have was a situation where there was laws being proposed that would say that civil service employees, these are not teachers or faculty,
correct,
these are civil service employees, would be eligible for a disciplinary hearing similar to what we provide to tenured teachers, where we would have to have an independent hearing officer and we'd go through this whole, what we call a 3020A process. 3020A is the regulation associated with teacher discipline for tenured teachers. We'd go through a whole process, expensive, time-consuming process on civil service employees. Civil service employees have their own protections already in place.
Teachers' aides, bus drivers,
right,
these kinds
right
of folks.
And you get to a certain tenure, if you will, as a civil servant, 5 years typically, you had a pretty ironclad job security. So we did not feel that this was necessary, and thankfully that legislation did not pass this year. I'm sure it'll be back in another session.
Well, there are so many issues that we could talk about in a nearly 40-year career in education, and of course, 20 years in New York State. We're speaking with Tim Creamer. He is the executive director of the New York State School Boards Association until December. It's quite a career when you look back at it, Tim. I remember when you didn't have white, so much white in your mustache and your hair like I do, too. And, you know, comment just a little bit on some of the changes you've seen in the role of school boards over that time.
You know, I was making a list, quite honestly, of the things that were issues that have happened during the last few years or last 21 years. And Common Core. And all the generations we've had of standards that have taken place.
And the jostling of that Common Core, back and forth.
Leading to opting out, a new phenomena. We have a variety of things in there having to do with different ways of teaching. Early college courses where kids are taking dual education courses. PTEC, as it's called. Project-based learning. Now, what was vocational education is now CTE. We have ESSA, which is the federal law, and that has been multiple generations, No Child Left Behind, onto this, onto that, and now into ESSA, and a variety of different things here. But as I look at some of the things that I've been really mostly involved in, charter schools arrived on the scene in New York about 2 months after I arrived. School safety has been a huge issue. Foundation aid and all the wars over that, money and control, if you will, including a thing that was called the gap elimination adjustment, mm-hmm, which was a big controversy. Teacher discipline issues, pension reforms, the property tax cap, mandatory school board training came about after a big problem we had down in Long Island. A lot of attention is now being paid to students' social and emotional well-being, mental health, things of that nature. And we can go on and on and on. Teacher evaluations was a big concern at one time. So we have a lot of different issues that have been my battleground or perhaps my saving grace for years. I have found this profession to be truly a calling, and it has kept me engaged for all these years. It's been just a wonderful place to be. New York has been an extraordinary place to work and live. I'm not leaving. I have all my kids live around, my grandkids, and we're going to plan to be here for a long time.
Well, that's fantastic. The issue, of course, of education is one of the most complicated issues we have in the state. And perhaps one of the reasons why that is that the funding for that comes out of the property tax. Your thoughts, now that you get to be free in December,
on the way we fund our schools. Let me just do a little history behind this, because we, you know, if you start with the idea that the state constitution entitles every child to a sound basic education, that's where you reference the CFA, the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit, right, that was launched all those years ago. They won that lawsuit.
Correct.
And the state did zero. So let's go from there and talk about the funding formula for the schools as they are now, and why maybe we have some of these complicated issues that add to the problems in education.
Well, you know, actually the state did something initially, but it has abandoned that. The foundation aid formula was really a very simple sort of thing. It said, look, we're going to identify the cost of providing a sound basic education for every student. And that a number was established. And then certain students have additional requirements because of their disabilities. They might be English language learners. There could be a variety of things that add cost, if you will, to teaching that student. So let's put that into the calculation. Different parts of the state have regional cost factors, and we understand that, so let's put that into it. And then different communities have an ability to pay. They can support themselves more than other communities. Let's put that. There are like four moving pieces of this formula. All made sense, and we were starting to make some great progress, and then the recession hit, and kaplooey. Everything went to the side, and we've never gotten back to that place where the foundation formula has been allowed to run. I'm not sure it ever really ran in and of itself, but we've never gotten that place where it was allowed to run as it was intended to do. And if we had that in place, I really do believe we would have a more equitable funding system across the state.
Tim Creamer, executive director of the New York State School Boards Association, who's retiring in December after over two decades in the post. That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1928 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.